You're listening to Central Time. I'm Mike Arnold.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Last month, comic book fans from around the world gathered at their main event, Comic-Con, in San Diego. Comic-Con is one of many conventions devoted to comics, science fiction, and other related genres, but most of the big ones are in major cities around the country.
This weekend, comic fandom charts new territory with a comic and science fiction event in Bayfield. Build is the first of its kind in the region. We'll meet the organizer behind the event, and in a few minutes, take a deeper look into what comics and superheroes tell us about American culture.
Blair Nelson joins us now. He's the director of the Bayfield Public Library and organizer of the Comic Sci-Fi Con starting Saturday at 10 a.m. in Bayfield. Blair, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Blair, how did you decide to hold a comic book convention in Bayfield?
Well, libraries are thinking of new ways to be creative and innovative and to reach more people, and it seemed like a good idea to try here to do a Comic-Con, especially since our summer reading program theme was Every Hero Needs has a Story. So we incorporated that idea with superhero themes. We showed Big Hero 6 and The Incredibles. The other night we showed Superman for the adults, and it just seemed like a great time to do it.
And there used to be, it seems, there was a bias against comic books, that they weren't considered literature and they might have been passed over. Has that changed? Are people on board now with the benefits that comic books have to offer the reader?
Oh, absolutely. I think we're seeing a real explosion in graphic novels, especially the last 10 years, and especially in films. Superhero movies are just exploding into the public. And even educators and librarians used to shun graphic novels, and I think that has really changed, and they're widely praised now, and a lot of them are taught in education, and the research has shown that it teaches new vocabulary, visual literacy, critical thinking, and they're excellent for reluctant readers, for librarians to suggest.
Are they a good point of entry for someone, maybe a kid who feels like they can't get through a whole maybe daunting chapter book? They can get into a comic.
Absolutely. And they are available in all ages now, and they just keep coming. So we're really seeing them get their exposure, which is great.
Well, tell us a little bit about your event in Bayfield. This is the first in the region, a Comic-Con like this. What's going to happen?
Well, we have arranged to have an author and illustrator. Our author is John Jackson Miller. He is an author of Star Wars comics. He's also worked in role-playing games, writing for them. He's the New York Times bestselling author of the Star Wars book Kenobi. And it just seemed like, since we're incorporating the sci-fi aspect to the con, that he would be a great fit. And he was suggested by a friend of mine from Wausau. And our illustrator is Jerry DeCare, and he'll be doing a hands-on workshop for all ages. So it's a great way for kids to see how to draw superheroes, how that works, and his angle is the science of the superhero, so actually using mathematics into it, which is really interesting and will be a new territory for me also. And he works for Marvel Comics as a freelancer, so he's had a lot of exposure to some of the major titles. We're also showing the PBS documentary Superheroes, A Never-Ending Battle, Part 2, which shows a lot of the history of comics, where they are now and where they were before. We're also having a costume contest with prizes, and we'll have lots of vendors here from around the area, such as Duluth, downstate. And it'll just be a great time for kids to dress up if they want to for the contest, adults to dress up.
Right, the costumes are a huge part of the fun, especially when you look at the
Absolutely.
Pictures from San Diego's Comic-Con. Do you think you're going to get that kind of all-out attention to the costuming?
I hope so. That would be really fun. I know to get in the spirit, I'm dressing up too, so I just want to show, all our guests, especially the kids, that how much we are into this and care about it.
Blair, what are you going to be?
Well, I am a Star Wars character, not from the films, but kind of a unique costume, to say that.
Not from the films. So Jar Jar? No, wait, he was from the films.
No, definitely not Jar Jar. Obi-Wan's character from the Clone Wars TV series. It has armor and that kind of thing. So it just seemed like you need a costume to wear and something kind of different
No
one else will be wearing. So,
well, terrific. Yeah, people will know to look for you now with the armor. Well, Blair, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Blair Nelson, director of the Bayfield Public Library, talking about the region's first comic sci-fi con starting Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. Now we're going to take a look at the wider impact of comics. Our next guest encourages his students to find deeper meanings about American culture in comic books and graphic novels.
Ramsey Fawaz is an assistant professor of English at UW-Madison. His forthcoming book is The New Mutants, Superheroes and the Radical Imagination of American Comics. Ramsey, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, so what do comics tell us about American culture?
I think that comics tell us so many extraordinary things about American culture, but more than anything, they tell us about what our fantasies are for the kind of world that we want. So when you think about it, comics, what are so extraordinary about the medium is that anything that you can draw, you can believe. So its representational capacities are extraordinary. They're huge. And so comics in the U.S. have often been a place where we draw or fantasize the kind of world that we want, or the world that we project for ourselves. So if you take the X-Men, for instance, you know, one of the most popular superhero comics in the history of the medium, it presented and still does to this day a fantasy of community amongst outcasts, of different kinds of people finding collectivity in the face of different forms of oppression. And so in that sense, I think that comics register our desires. And I think another thing is that they register some of the hierarchies that we put on media. The fact that, as you guys were just talking about, comics have often been seen as trash culture or as children's culture says something about the ways in which those fantasies that we are narrating are threatening to people. This is what I call in my book kind of the radical imagination of American comics. There's something threatening about some of the fantasies that are presented in comics. And so one of the ways we deal with that is that people denigrate the medium. So I think you can also register kind of the hierarchy of media by looking at comics.
Now, they also do something else that might be surprising when you consider how comics have been dismissed over the years, and that is, you say they focus on representing racial, gender, and sexual minorities in the United States. Maybe they don't focus on that, but they end up representing that along with their storytelling. How did comics end up fulfilling that role?
I think that's a great question, because we don't usually associate, especially superhero comic books, with doing that. So when we think of classical golden age superheroes, we think of Superman, Wonder Woman, Captain America, these kind of stalwart supporters of a nationalist kind of white middle class image. But in the post-war period, superheroes kind of went out of style. You have the atomic bomb. You have molecular engineering. Why do you need superheroes? Humans have become superheroes. And so you have a veering away towards other genres like crime and horror. But under the kind of pressures of McCarthyism, the Cold War, crime and horror comic books were seen as extremely problematic and deviant. And so creators decided to go back to the superhero because the character looked like apple pie in baseball. But in order to make the character relevant to a new generation, the counterculture, this youth generation, like growing up in the 50s and the 60s, they reinvented the figure as a species and social outcast. So suddenly you're seeing characters like the Fantastic Four who just appear like ordinary white middle class New Yorkers who suddenly their biology is transformed. They become mutants, freaks, and they suddenly identify with people who don't fit into the American social order. And by reinventing the superhero this way, creators had to actually deal with what they had created. They had to deal with the fact that superheroes now embody differences between people. So when you think about it, anyone who loves or reads superhero comic books, they're able to, at minute detail, this is kind of the thinking of the great fan, right? They're able to identify distinctions between characters. Well, that's a mutant. That's an inhuman. That's a freak, et cetera, right? And so comic books are obsessed with phenotypic or bodily difference. And the beauty of that is it allows comic books to actually deal substantively with the problem that we call difference, the problem that people are different than each other.
Now this change in comic books, I mean, when they started, they're sort of a post-war phenomenon.
I think that
And then is this sort of like a rock and roll literature kind of thing that happens with the 50s and 60s, where comic books become sort of a reflection of that, of the youth culture, and also the emergence of a lot of different kinds of ways of living life?
I mean, absolutely. I think you hit it. I think what we have is in the early 60s, there is what we call kind of the Marvel Revolution in comics, where Marvel Comics kind of reinvents the superhero as an outcast.
And all the characters had some flaws to them.
Absolutely. right. They're broken in many ways. They're broken by the demand to be normal, to live up to kind of the standards of a white middle class ideal of suburban life. And so absolutely, one of the things I talk about extensively in my work is that rather than simply being a reflection of kind of the emergence of the counterculture, these comics were a negotiation. Their content was an ongoing negotiation between creators who were just good liberals. They were anti-racist, anti-fascist, but they weren't necessarily radicals. And suddenly they have this readership, these young people, who are saying, actually, we're really invested in changing the world. We want to make the world much less racist, much less imperialist. And so they take these creators up at their word, and they demand more radicalism, more transformation. So what you see in the content is a kind of ongoing political negotiation over what fantasy can do and should be. And that's a really beautiful, exciting thing. I think it's often easy to read comics as a mere reflection. So you say, like, okay, you know, the 60s is happening, comics reflect that. But comics were actually part of producing the 60s, making that countercultural moment and after possible.
So do you think if you're someone who felt like you were on the outskirts of mainstream society, you're a woman or you're a gay kid, that you're looking at this and you're thinking, here's a place where I can belong, and you're drawn to it, and maybe it makes the world a little safer for you?
I mean, absolutely. I think this is how youth describe their relationship to comics in the 60s and the 70s, and how there's now kind of a new renaissance in comics, and we're seeing it again. I mean, a reader that I talk about often is there's a young African-American teenage woman named Marilyn Brogdon who wrote into the X-Men. To backtrack, readers could write letters to comics in this period throughout the 60s and 70s, and many of them might get published in the actual comic book. So there was an ongoing dialogue between different kinds of people that reflected the differences in the comic. And so this woman, she writes this letter to the X-Men, and she says, I have been reading comic books my whole childhood, and I've never seen a black woman. And now you've introduced this character, Storm. And she says, not only is she a black woman, she's African. So she's not just African-American. And she suggests that what's so amazing is that she gets to encounter through this comic book different forms of blackness, different ways of inhabiting that identity. And that's actually my own personal kind of attachment to comics was as a young gay man, being a teenager, feeling bullied, ostracized, and reading the X-Men for the first time and thinking, I identify with these people, even though they're not quite exactly like me.
Well, we're talking right now about comics and American culture with Ramsey Fawaz from UW-Madison. His forthcoming book is called The New Mutants, Superheroes and the Radical Imagination of American Comics.
And you can join the conversation, too, at 800-642-1234. Do comics and graphic novels play a role in your life? Or did they when you were younger? Was there a point in your life where comic books were a place where you fit in? Or when it was hard to do so in your daily life? Call 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We continue our conversation about comic books and their role in American culture. Ramsey Fawaz stays with us. He's an assistant professor of English at UW-Madison, and his forthcoming book is called The New Mutants, Superheroes and the Radical Imagination of American Comics.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have comics played an important role in your life? What do you think comics tell us about American culture? If you felt like an outsider at one time or another, did comics and maybe comic conventions give you a place to fit in? Call 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're going to go to the phones right now with Michael from Milwaukee. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi there. How are you today?
Good, good. What's your thought?
I mean, I was when I was listening and hearing about how X-Men was more for outcasts, I couldn't relate more. Like, that was my like prime years, my formative years growing up. I was reading Uncanny X-Men in the 90s, and it kind of had a second coming and became mainstream then with like Generation X, where it was funny because New Mutants is the title then, and that was like a contemporary New Mutants.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's crazy now how everybody's into comic books now. Like, I think 8 years ago, I would have thought it was freakish to see, like, a little girl walking around with an Avengers backpack or to even know who Avengers are. And it's a little bit weird as an actual, you know, loyal comic book nerd to see that all the time now.
Well, thanks for that comment, Michael. It is interesting. It seems like it's sort of both a counterculture thing and then also this huge money-making,
absolutely,
you know, juggernaut machine.
I mean, I think that that's irrevocably changed what comics can do. I mean, in a weird way, comics have become a lot more mainstream, but people aren't actually reading comics. They are just familiar with the characters through movies and licensing, etc. And independent comics have had a chance to kind of once again have a renaissance. But in a weird way, I actually think there's both a resurgence of reading of comics and also people are not actually reading them. So when people ask me, what should I read? I always say, like, go buy the original X-Men in the 60s and 70s. Read the New Mutants of the 80s, what he was mentioning. Amazing comic books. They're all reprinted. And see where all these stories came from originally.
Well, it's interesting also what Michael brought up. He said it was weird seeing a young girl with an Avengers backpack, which there's a stereotype that
absolutely.
Comic book nerds are white, straight guys.
Yes.
Has that ever been true?
You know, it wasn't classically. I mean, comic books in the 30s, the heyday, were Superman sold 9 million copies a month. It's insane. It's unbelievable circulation figures. And they were read by boys and girls 50-50.
And it was also more common for adults to read.
Absolutely.
I remember that there's a picture of Elvis Presley when he was in the Army with a comic book.
And GIs, this was a huge form of entertainment for them
that
circulated. I think after World War II in the 50s, when the House Un-American Acts Committee chastises comics for, you know, selling ideas about criminality and deviancy, the circulation figures reduce. You're getting more like 340,000 issues a month, etc. So you have a huge reduction. And yet, boys and girls are still reading comic books. And now it's more teenage women, teenage men. And what happens is that there's a diversification of genres. So you have romance genres, war genres, and that's why you start getting more boys reading superhero comics. But that idea of the white, you know, straight teenage boy is really a product of the 1980s when something happens called the direct market, when comic books are no longer available on newsstands and at bookstores, but they get located in comic book stores. Well, now it's like a niche space. So who feels comfortable in that space is mostly white, straight male boys. So that's a very unique effect of production histories and circulation histories.
Well, let's go to the phones. We have another call. Olivia from Madison. Welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What's your comment?
I just wanted to comment on the great impact that they've had on my life. My father read comic books to us as kids, and it was me and my two brothers, and really helped my younger brother with his reading disabilities that he worked through. Comic books really helped in that. Also, I was very much a Laura Ingalls Wilder kind of girl, and it opened up just a very different world for me that helped me appreciate a broader population, because I was just kind of a normal kid, and there's an abnormality to reading these at that time, and I loved it. I'm so grateful. I know more people than I would have. And my brother reads better, and we all have an appreciation for it as a family.
I love that. I mean, I would say quickly, you know, comics are incredibly challenging to read. You know, I taught a class when I first arrived on sexuality and graphic fiction, and the New York Times Magazine did like a little blurb on like the 9 sexiest comic courses in the country. I mean, sexiest courses in the country, and they listed mine, and they made a joke. They said easiest reading list. And the funny thing is my students thought it was the most challenging course they had ever taken, because comics demand incredible cognitive attention to orientation, images, words, but in a weird way, because they feel accessible, they actually both let you in and then demand a lot of you. And people actually exercise their skill so much more. You know, it's an orientation device.
Mm-hmm. And so, Ramsey, I want to ask you, I mean, obviously you've got a lot of passion for this. This isn't something you just picked up in college. You've been doing this your whole life. How did comics change your life and direct the way you charted your course?
Oh, it's such a good question. You know, when I was, it's a cheesy story, but when I was 13, in between, you know, the summer between my middle school years, I was going through an extremely difficult part of my life, being bullied, read, coming to terms with my sexuality very young. And I discovered an X-Men comic book, and it was the 35th anniversary of the series. And I felt a deep, immediate identification with these characters because that anniversary issue was playing up the fact that they are social outcasts who find community. And so they provided for me a fantasy of the kind of community I wanted. And I found that community in intellectual life amongst people at UC Berkeley, at George Washington University, who believe that popular culture matters, that it has political value, and that people started telling me when I went to school and I was still a fan years later, they were like, why don't you just study this? Like, why don't you, you know so much about literature, theory, culture, why don't you apply all of that to the thing that you love?
And here we are today, fast forward. Well, Ramsey,
absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thank
it
was
you a delight
so much.
To talk to you.
Absolutely. You as well.
That was Ramsey Fawaz, Assistant Professor of English at UW-Madison. His forthcoming book is called The New Mutants, Superheroes and the Radical Imagination of American Comics.